Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When I'm speaking to them, I'm not getting pictures of heaven the way religions want us to believe. And I think that if more people knew this, that maybe we'd be living our lives a little differently.
You're listening to The Ghost Files, the podcast where everyday people share their extraordinary stories about the spirit world. My name is Karina Machado. I'm a journalist who spent more than a decade sharing stories about the spirit world through my books, Spirit Sisters, Where Spirits Dwell, and Love Never Dies, as well as my podcasts, Spirit Sisters and now The Ghost Files. My guest today, Christine Ferris, realised as a child that she could see things that other people couldn't, as she puts it, and quickly learnt to keep quiet about it. Growing up in a haunted house in the western suburbs of Sydney, it was not unusual for Christine to see strangers that were not of this world, yet looked flesh and blood, and they'd be wandering the hallways of her home. These experiences led her on a lifelong quest to answer the eternal question, is there life after death? For the last 25 years, Christine has been clearing spirits from haunted houses, and over the last decade, she's been running tours of the Convent Gallery in Daylesford, Victoria. Christine has a wealth of spine-tingling stories to share, so settle in. And remember, I always love to hear from the audience, so if you have a story to share, please write to me on Facebook and Instagram at Karina Machado Author, or email me at karinamachado@optusnet.com.au. Now, over to my conversation with Christine. Hello, Christine, and welcome to The Ghost Files. It's lovely to have you join us from Ballarat, Victoria.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Christine, you have decades of experience as a paranormal investigator, but before we get into some of your most memorable encounters, I'd like to wind the clock back to your childhood. When did you first become aware that you could see people that were invisible to others?
When I was in year two, my family moved to Harris Park, which is next to Parramatta, and it was a very, very, very old house. When we started living there, I started seeing people in my house that weren't my family, and I was about seven or so, I guess, maybe eight, and I didn't understand why there were all these people in the house. I mentioned it to my parents, and they assured me that there was nobody there, but I could see them. And it was really frightening as a child, because we had a toilet out in the very backyard, and I had to go out there on my own in the nighttime if I needed to go to the bathroom, and there were people everywhere.
Tell us about these people. Were they men, women, a mixture of both, children? Tell us a bit more about who you were seeing.
The interesting thing is that the people that I was seeing in that house were all men, and they were older men. So I don't know why that was the case, or whether a whole bunch of old men lived there or died there or what.
But,
they were all older men. They would have been, you know, 60s and over.
Right. And the first thing I thought of just then when you said that was, I wonder if at any point the home had been some sort of halfway house or
Look, I wondered about that too. Unfortunately, I've never been able to find out the answer to that.
Okay.
Neighbours who lived there before, you know, who've been there their whole lives, have long died. So, yeah, I don't know the answer, but I had wondered that myself as an adult.
So how many do you think you were seeing?
Oh, look, I would say it was probably between 5 and 10 most times.
Okay. And did they look like solid people to you, so you couldn't tell the difference between, you know, humans and the spirits?
Yeah, look, to me, most of the time I see a ghost, they do appear completely solid, and these ones did appear to be solid, and I would go up to them and I would sort of try and touch them to see if they were really there. So I didn't understand what was going on at all, and I had no one to talk to about it.
No, you wouldn't. But what happened when you went up to try and touch them? Did you actually touch something?
No, because I could see them, but they weren't physically there in a physical manner. So my hand just sort of went straight through them. So that was really frightening.
Gosh. And were they, I'm just trying to think, were they sentient spirits? Could they see you as you could see them? Or do you feel like you were sort of peering into a time in the past, like you were? They were sort of an imprint on the building?
Certainly, no, I don't believe that they're an imprint on the building. In this instance, I don't believe it was like stone tape theory or anything like that. Half of them could interact with me and the other half didn't. Whether they couldn't or didn't, I don't know. At that point, I didn't have the ability that I do now to be able to communicate with them and work it out. So,
what was that communication like? What can you remember? I know you were only seven at the time.
I didn't really know how to communicate then. I have since learned. I'm in my 50s now, so, you know, I've had a lot of time to practice and a lot of opportunity. But back then I didn't know how to do any of that.
Right.
So it was very frightening and very frustrating. You know, I'd see them in my room in the nighttime when I was trying to go to sleep. I had a manhole in my bedroom. And my father, and it scared me, my father put a piece of board on the inside of the manhole, which was kind of heavy, and every night it would just move, and it was just awful. So there were lots and lots of things in the house that scared me. So I spent much of my childhood scared.
Oh, my goodness, I can't imagine. But before we move on to the next part, I just wanted to check one thing. So you said that half of them could communicate with you. What would they do? Would they say, hi, we see you, or tell us about that?
No, generally there was a couple that if I walked into a room, they'd walk out, or if I was walking down the hallway, they'd move, which was the only real way that I thought that I knew that they knew that I was there.
I see, yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't a verbal communication or a mentally verbal communication at that point.
How fascinating, Christine. So what happened when you told your parents?
Initially I told them and they just said, look, it's rubbish, you're imagining things and there's no one here. And then it went on for years and years and years and the encounters were becoming more frightening. And when I was about 10, maybe they took me to a psychiatrist because they accused me of lying. So when I went to the psychiatrist, it was very much a matter of, why are you lying about this? It was never, oh, what are you actually seeing? And there was no validation to any of it. It was just a matter of, how can we stop her lying? Mm-hmm. So I very quickly learnt to just shut up.
Yes.
I realised that it wasn't safe for me to tell everyone that information and that they would judge me, and typically badly, and think things about me that were not true. So I just learnt to be quiet.
Wow. I can't imagine how that felt, because you weren't validated and you just had to zip it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It was a huge burden. It affected every part of my life.
Do you feel like you have resolved that now, or do you feel like you're still carrying that burden in a way?
No, I don't feel like I'm carrying the burden anymore. My parents had their own encounter a little while after that that made them second guess their attitude towards what I had been telling them since I was seven. And they even got the priest in at that point to bless the house, and I knew that that was just not going to work.
Oh, my gosh. So your parents changed their tune. Do you know what happened?
I do. A couple of things happened. I'd started high school and I met a girl at high school and she was coming over to my house for a night or something, and her mother dropped her off and walked her to the door. And when I opened the door, her mother looked at the house, like looked inside and looked at me, and she said, you see them, don't you?
Wow.
And at that point I felt validated. Someone else was seeing what I was seeing. So my friend's mother was a medium and was able to teach me some things. But as far as what happened to my parents, and it was all around the same time, my mother was ironing inside the lounge room. I was out doing something, and the iron she alleges, and I believe her, that the iron flew up and hit her.
Ooh.
She ran next door to the neighbour. That neighbour had lived there her whole life. And she wasn't, she never seemed surprised by any of the things that we told her about what's happening in the house. So that was interesting. But my mother went in there and she made her a cup of tea and she stayed in there until I got home. My mother wouldn't go back into the house until I got home.
Oh my gosh. Did your mother say something like, I now understand?
No.
Or no? Okay.
No, she didn't. Their answer was, well, we better get the priest in. There might be something going on here. So the priest came and did a blessing and it was absolutely useless. So,
as you said earlier that you thought it would be, you didn't think it would work. Why did you not think that would work?
I really don't know. I guess I just had no faith in the priest, be honest.
Right.
So I just thought, yeah, I think you're wasting your time, but sure, why not? It'll be fun to watch. Okay. So
so was there a spiritual belief in your home, or better, you know, put, what were your spiritual beliefs at that time that all this was unfolding? Oh,
that's probably a whole other show.
Oh, wow.
I grew up in, I'm going to say, a hypocritical Catholic family. I resented religion.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem to align with what I was experiencing, and there's a lot of feelings of guilt associated with religion, and I didn't subscribe to any of that, even as young as, you know, 7 or 8 when I started going to a Catholic school. So I really struggled with what they were trying to have me believe, because it didn't really align with my life experience, even at that age.
I understand, and that helps us understand why you didn't have faith in what, you know, these priests, you know, could do to release these spirits from your home. That's more clear
now.
Yeah, okay. So, Christine, what happened with your gift of seeing spirit as you grew into your teen years? Did it sort of fade into the background of your life, or did it become more pronounced?
No, it became more pronounced. Also, I never call it a gift, and I do that very deliberately. I do believe that it's something that most people can learn.
Okay.
Much like playing tennis, if you practice hard enough, you'll learn it, and I really believe that that's the case. There's nothing too good about some of the things that I see.
Yes.
Most of it is a real burden. You know, when you're traveling around the world and you're going to places where people have died, and you're seeing the instances of that as you're walking down the streets trying to enjoy today.
Oh, my gosh.
And you have glimpses of the past. It's really, really hard. So I just wanted to put that in. A lot of people do refer to it as a gift, and I don't view it as that. But
I understand. My goodness.
Yeah, as a teenager, it got more obvious and it was a bigger part of my life. But I had at that point someone to talk to about it, so it was a little bit different to when I was in primary school and I had no one to speak to.
So was that your friend's mum?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And so at what point did it become clear to you that this may become your life's work to work with these spirits?
When I was an adult, I married and I took time off from the whole thing. I had a child quite young in that marriage, and I just decided that I didn't necessarily want to have all of this around him if I could help it. So I decided to take some time off. It didn't really work out for me. Oh. By the time I was in my late 20s again, it was very obvious that my path has been chosen for me in another way. So the things that I had been blocking out for the last 6 or 7 years, or for the previous 6 and 7 years, were really rising up and demanding attention. So at that point, I invested an awful lot of time and energy into learning as much as I could. Okay. By the time I hit my 30s, I was starting the paranormal research team.
Okay, so could you tell us or give us a little bit of an idea of what were some of the events that were happening that made it obvious that, you know, there was no ignoring this?
While I was trying to block it out, it takes an awful lot of energy to turn it off. So I was expending a lot of energy, keeping it turned off all of the time, and things were coming through. I would be getting messages to give to people in shops from their dead relatives.
Oh my
and
gosh.
I was getting messages to about things that were going to happen. And it was just becoming more and more intrusive to the point where I thought it's actually probably easier to turn off the turning off and do the work again.
Okay.
My son was a bit older by that point, so I didn't feel the same sense of intrusion or perhaps even danger that I felt when he was a baby. I had tried Christianity to maybe get some relief from the constant barrage of information that I was currently or always getting. The problem with that was that if you mention to a Christian that you're getting this, they think it's satanic and that you're evil. And I was ostracized by a lot of people. And I just thought, well, if this is Christianity, I don't need any of that. So at that point, I just decided to learn as much as I could and try and control it better. And at that point too, I also got really, really tired of people telling me that I was imagining it or that it took me back to when I was taken to the psychiatrist and told I was a liar. Right. So it became a mission for me to prove to these people that there is something, there is life after death, and you can ignore it all you want, but if I could get some proof of it, then I would feel vindicated.
So, Christine, that's so helpful to understand because now I feel like we can understand sort of what drove this quest of yours and why you had to start this paranormal forum, which later then evolved into the investigation. So tell us about some of the most haunted places or indeed the most haunted place that you've investigated and what you experienced there.
Oh, gosh. We worked with an author for a couple of years, and that was a really wonderful couple of years because during that time we were doing a lot of investigations and we were able to get access to the cream of the crop of places as well.
Fantastic.
I've investigated so many places in Victoria specifically because I live here. So most of them were done here because everything is at your own cost and it's very expensive.
Right.
We've investigated the township of Walhalla and the old post office there and some old miners' cottages in Walhalla. We've investigated Como House and Ripon Lee, which are National Trust properties in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
We've done Sepelt's Winery and the tunnels under the Sepelt Winery in Great Western. We've done Jaywater, Ararat. We've done the convent in Dalesford. The Sacred Heart Convent in Ballarat. The list goes on
wow.
and on and on. We've also done Monte Cristo in Junee.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but look, I'm such a skeptic, which is highly ironic, but so many places say, oh, we're the most haunted place. Yeah, Monte Cristo is, you know, run by some amazing people and they're doing some wonderful work in Junee for the community. And, you know, they like to say they're the most haunted house,
yes.
Which may or may not be the case. Arredale, I think was recently voted as being the most haunted building, but I'm not sure who voted or how.
Okay.
But I've investigated Arredale as well. In all honesty, one of the most haunted places I've ever been to is the convent in Dalesford.
Oh.
It's crazy.
So that's an art gallery these days.
It is an art gallery. It was originally the Gold Commissioner's House in Dalesford.
Okay.
And so then it was sold to the Catholic Church and it became the presbytery for the priests. But it became so derelict and run down and, you know, it was hot and cold and they didn't like it. So the Catholic Church built a new presbytery for the priests and then they had this building and they thought, well, what are we going to do with this building? And they thought, oh, I know, we'll put the nuns here. The nuns will put up with it. So they put the nuns in there. So the nuns have the longest history with that building and I think it's something like 26 nuns actually died on the premises.
Oh my
but
gosh.
You've also got all of the surrounding gold rush history, you know, people who died during the gold rush, who were knocked on the head and thrown down a mine and left for dead, or who died from, you know, earth collapse and that sort of thing. And that's all on that hill in Daleford where the convent is. So it's the most amazing place.
Wow, I can't imagine what it's like for you as somebody who has this mediumship to be walking through a place like that. Are you sensing? Tell us what you experience when you're there, or a story of one of the most profound moments you had there.
Well, the first time we went there, a lot of the girls and guys from my paranormal forum had come to Ballarat for a big meeting, and we were doing some training, and we had a spare day. We decided we'd go to Daylesford to the convent, and I'd never been there before. Didn't know what to expect, wasn't expecting it to be haunted to this sort of degree. When I walked in there, it became really obvious it was haunted because I was followed around by a nun, and the nun was really unhappy. At the time, there was a display of nuns in priest collars, which is not so bad, but they were naked, and the nun was really unhappy about this art.
Oh, I see. So these were artworks, right.
They were. And she didn't explain why they were in a convent, so I had to explain to her that it wasn't a convent anymore and it was a gallery, and we sort of had that conversation.
Could you see her, Christine?
Yeah, I did.
So was it like a flesh and blood nun standing in front of you in a habit?
Yeah, that's usually how I see them, and okay. It was a full neck to ground habit, really heavy, like Irish wool. Gosh, that would have been hot in the summer.
Oh, wow, yes.
So I was with some people, some of the researchers from my team, and at that point I deliberately stayed away from any little placards or signs that would give me hints about its history, and they started taking notes. After that, we went upstairs to the infirmary at the very, very top of the building, and a nun came running out of the infirmary, and her and I kind of collided as much as you can with an object that isn't physical on the stairs, and I stopped short, and she was saying, oh, you know, my roof is leaking and how do I look after the nuns up here with under these conditions, and someone was meant to come and fix my roof and they haven't come. So I was giving all of this information to the researchers who were making notes. And then we went into the infirmary and had a bit of a look, and there did appear to be a leak. So
there was still
strange.
A leak.
There actually is still a leak.
Oh,
it's
my
hilarious.
Gosh.
It's really hard to get tradies in Ballarat, Daylesford, apparently. So after that day, we found Tina, who owns the convent, wandering around, and I introduced myself, and it was just after there'd been a magazine article about me. I think it might have actually been in That's Life.
Yes.
And so she kind of knew about me in some way.
Yeah.
And we had asked her for permission to come in and investigate, and that was early 2007. And we've been working there ever since.
Oh, so you run tours there?
Yes,
okay,
I do.
Okay. Wow. So that sounds like an extraordinary place. I haven't been, but I need to get myself there. It sounds fantastic.
You do. Yeah, we've been running tours there for 12 years, and they're sold out when they run, and it's great.
Well, in that's Life piece, I read it, and you had an encounter there with a nun that sadly had a horrible smell.
Yeah, she comes through once or twice a year.
And you can still smell her.
Yeah, you can. It smells like rotting flesh. It's, yeah, or if you don't know what rotting flesh smells like, if you've ever had a cat or a dog with an abscess, it's that smell.
Oh,
it's terrible.
And
yeah,
why,
it's really terrible.
I believe you got to the bottom of why there was that odour with her.
There was a nun that had died as a result of injuries from falling down the stairs. Stairs there's a lot of stairs, and they're really, really steep. And look, I can't get her name. She doesn't communicate. She is more an example of a stone tape theory, where she's the same person doing the same thing at certain times of the year. So the researchers do believe, and I subscribe to that somewhat, that it's probably this lady who had such terrible injuries and, yeah.
The injuries weren't treated and so they festered. You believe the wound festered. Okay, and that's what that smell is. Gosh, wow, that's traumatic for everyone involved to be smelling that.
Yeah, it is. It really unsettles the staff at the convent. The poor lady.
Poor lady.
She just tears through there.
And so, Christine, I know that it's not just the tours that you run and the investigations, but you also help people in private homes who are having problems with spirits. Mm.
Yeah, we do. Through the forum, we get a lot of people emailing us with problems, and the last resort is that I will go there and try and work it out. What I prefer to do is teach them how to do it themselves and empower them to see if they can come and see if they can come to a conclusion themselves and fix it. And then if they really fail with that, then I will often go out there and sort it out. Sometimes it's shops and old buildings and things, and other times it's private homes.
Okay. So just briefly, because I'm sure that this is a very involved process, but how do you move the spirits on?
That is a very involved process. My preferred way is trying to speak to them to make them understand that they're in the wrong place.
Okay.
And to encourage them to go forward to be with their dead loved ones. And if I can, I try and get their dead loved ones to come forward so that they can see each other, and then their dead loved ones will take them. There's lots and lots of things that go into that whole process, but fundamentally that's how I do it.
Okay. And do you think that there has to be somebody with psychic or mediumistic abilities inside a home for it to be haunted?
No.
Okay.
No, and the prime example of that is my childhood home. It was haunted. I was there. My parents were completely oblivious.
Right.
It was still haunted. If I hadn't been there, it still would have been haunted.
I see. Yeah, I understand.
It was haunted after I left. It remained haunted.
Do tell.
Yeah, so some squatters moved in at some point after the family left the home, and the squatters eventually left because they were scared. Some years later, it was derelict, and I was visiting Sydney, and I went through the house with some friends and my brother. And
wow, what an experience!
The squatters had written graffiti on the walls about evil living there, and you know the beanie bears, they'd hung up some beanie bears that had the angel wings. Trying to ward off the evil in the house, and not even the squatters wanted to stay there. So clearly, even after I left, it was still haunted. So I don't think you need to have any sort of ability necessarily for it.
And when you went back to your childhood home, I understand that there was a bit of a showdown of sorts that you had with one of the former. We could call him one of your old foes there from your childhood.
Yeah. Look, and in hindsight, I think he was sort of the leader. He was the ringleader of some sort. Whether he appointed himself or they appointed him, I have no idea. But his name was Duncan. I was able to find out when I went back.
Duncan.
With more ability. Okay. Yeah.
Did you get a surname, Christine?
I didn't, no.
Okay.
Names and dates are the hardest thing to get.
Yes.
Sometimes I'll get both. Sometimes I'll get one. Like at the convent, I was getting full names like Aloysius Evans and all sorts of things. But at that house, best I could do was Duncan.
Okay. What happened when you saw him again?
So when I went back with my brother and some friends, he came straight up to me and he was face to face with me. And you could just see he was aware of who I was. He knew who I was. And I said to him, "You can't scare me anymore. And if you're not careful, I'll just send you to the light." So he backed off really quickly. He knew that I was a different being now, and that he couldn't mess with me. And he took a step back.
Wow, my gosh. How did you feel after that moment?
Pretty victorious. You know, they'd haunted me my whole childhood. Yes. It was horrible.
You'd felt so much fear throughout your childhood.
Yeah, and in my bedroom there was a laneway at the side between the two houses that were next to each other, and it was up high. It wasn't at head level, my window, and I would have faces at my window all night, and it was just terrible. So for me finally to be able to walk in and say, you know, if any of you mess with me today, you're out of here, it was great.
What a moment. And so do you feel like you've gone towards answering that question that, you know, was that in a way haunted your childhood, is there life after death? What are your thoughts on that?
I do. As some sort of evidence, and, you know, I'm not saying that this evidence is recognisable by the scientific community or anyone in particular, but it meets my standard of evidence, whereby there's more than two pieces of some sort of evidence corroborating one experience. So, for example, from the convent gallery in Daylesford, I've been able to get, all the years I've been doing paranormal research, the best photo of an apparition that I've ever seen.
Oh.
And a lot of people put up orb pictures and say, oh, it's a ghost, and it really isn't.
Yeah.
This is a picture of two nuns with one of the nuns holding a child.
Oh, my gosh. Can I see that, and Christine? Would you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, of course, of course. It's incredible. And I show this picture to everyone who comes on the ghost tour. And I've been doing tours there for 12 years. There's not many people that say they can't see it. It looks like a nun.
Fantastic.
It's just incredible. So I've gotten that. The other thing that we've gotten from the convent gallery is some really amazing electronic voice phenomena.
Mm.
And there's one particular clip, and I'm happy to send this one to you as well.
Thank you.
Where Mother Superior is walking through the building and she says, check the children.
Wow.
It's incredible. So for me, that nun is the nun that I see when I go there, and we ask them to be in pictures, and, you know, if this time she just decided to be in a picture. That voice recording was taken in an empty room. How do you explain those things except that sometimes the unlikely answer is the one that's true?
That's right. Oh, my gosh. And that satisfied, that skeptical nature that you have, which is so great to balance the mediumship, I think.
Yeah, because if we had just gotten a voice recording, or if we had just gotten a photo, I would not consider that to be good enough. In both of the instances where we received the voice recording and we got the picture, there were other pieces of evidence. There was a temperature drop in the case of the photo, and there is a theory that we subscribe to that the temperature can drop very dramatically from, you know, 7 degrees and upwards in the presence of a ghost.
Yes.
In this case, it dropped 14 degrees.
Ooh.
Yeah, which was significant. Significant.
I've
that
never heard
accidentally,
of such a, yeah, I've never heard of
no,
such a drop. Yeah.
No, it doesn't accidentally happen, especially in a sealed off building when you're investigating, even in the middle of the night. It just doesn't happen.
No.
There was no airflow. In the case of the voice recording, we leave an audible EMF detector with a machine that's recording, and just prior to Mother Superior saying check the children, the EMF meter went off. So there's more than one piece of evidence to corroborate what we captured.
Okay, that's fantastic to know. Wow, it's been so wonderful speaking with you. You've got so much wisdom to impart, but I can't let you go without asking you the question I put to all of my guests, Christine, on the Ghost Files. What can an encounter with the dead teach us about living?
Oh, wow. That's a whole other show too, but very quickly.
We'll have to get you back on, clearly.
Oh, that'd be great. I think that it can teach us not to be so wound up with what other people want us to believe. I'm yet to speak to a ghost that is telling me about hell or judgment or anything like that.
Mm.
And I think that if more people living knew that maybe there wasn't a hell and maybe there wasn't that judgment that many religions want us to believe there is, mm-hmm. that we might live our lives a little bit differently. In fact, I'm going to go out and say that I've actually not spoken to ghosts that speak of heaven. They speak of a life in between life, in between their lives.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm a trained hypnotherapist and I do past life regression as well.
Oh, that's another show too. Wow, Christine.
It is. So, you know, when I'm speaking, and I use my mediumship abilities to speak with people's guides when I'm doing past life regressions.
Okay.
When I'm speaking to them, I'm not getting pictures of heaven the way religions want us to believe, the way they want to sell us heaven. And I think that if more people knew this, that maybe we'd be living our lives a little differently.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. There's a lot to chew on there, and we really appreciate you coming on the Ghost Files today, Christine.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
I want to quickly take a moment to thank the listeners who've reviewed the show. I so enjoy reading your feedback and would like to encourage you all to subscribe to The Ghost Files and leave us a review, as that helps more listeners discover the show. Thank you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.